Support for the PCTA Fire podcast comes exclusively from listeners like yourself. If you appreciate the work we're doing, please show your support by sharing the podcast on social media and leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred podcast streaming service. Thanks once again for tuning in, and without any more delay, let's start the show. Hey guys, welcome back to PCTA's Fire Podcast. I'm Brendan Pickett. I'm your FBA Director and Fire Co-Chair here at PCTA.
Hi, I'm Philip Del Castro. I'm PCTA Director at Large and English Teacher.
Hi, I'm Jeff Mann. I'm a producer on the documentary film Americon.
And we are here today to talk to Mr. Jeff himself about his movie, because at PCTA today, we're going to have a showing.
Yeah.
And you're going to answer questions at the end, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool that we have going on. Free popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, go get your popcorn.
Very cool.
So to start us off, Jeff, could you go into who you are? Who are you?
Okay, so I'm Jeff Mann. I live in St. Pete about 6.5 years. Before that, I've been in Minneapolis, 11. I grew up in Massachusetts, spent some time in New York City as well, lived there for about 6 years. But we moved here, my wife and I moved here about in 2017.
Yeah.
To go into our first question, a common organizing technique you'll hear around the union world is this concept of inspiring people through our stories or our quote unquote our why. Mm-hmm. So Jeff, what inspired you to produce this documentary on unions, or for our union folks out there, like, what's your why?
Yeah, so that's a bit of a long story. I'll try to keep it short. I'd say about 15 years or so ago, I started to dive into economics. I got sort of obsessed with studying the topic of inequality in economics, and inequality and how it kind of kept getting worse over the years. A good friend of mine from childhood, Dave Pedersen, another producer on the film, he also produced the movie Super Size Me. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So they were nominated for an Academy Award. But
yeah.
So he's a good friend of mine. We know each other for like 45 years. So uh-huh. We text and communicate back and forth regularly, and, you know, we're always trading, you know, ideas and stories, and, you know, we have similar views on things. So
I literally just ate a whole bag of French fries, and now I feel terrible.
Yeah. I think it was several years ago, we kind of, you know, both had the idea of a documentary film on this topic. I know that some people have done some academic films on inequality and things of that nature, but we felt like it wasn't being covered in the way it needed to be covered, right, for it to connect with people. So Dave recruited Sean Claffey, the director. I hadn't met Sean up until that point. Dave recruited Sean to kind of direct it, and you know, Sean did so much for this film. But And then he recruited Jillian Hurley, who's also a producer on the film, and he put the team together. And around like 2019, we really started to film. Right, we basically started this whole process, and this was before COVID, before mm-hmm. you know, the topic was out there. Like, you know, people were talking about inequality, but it wasn't. We weren't sure people were going to care, right? So, and then COVID hit, and it kind of like. Changed yeah. everything, changed everybody's views on how this whole, it kind of became front and center for people, I think, more.
That was kind of my take too, yeah. Like when I started watching it, so I knew that PCTA was kind of hosting the screening, and I didn't know if I was going to be here for the actual screening, but then Jamie's like, oh, you should interview Jeff, and I was like, okay, so now I got to like get on watching it. And I didn't know what I was going to get into. So I was thinking, like, this is going to be kind of like a Freakonomics or inequality for all type of deal. But then what you just said, it is different, because it's like, it's clearly filmed like right in the middle of the pandemic, plus a lot of those pandemic problems that are still persisting, even, you know, after filming was obviously finished. We're still dealing with a lot of that stuff. So kind of like the pandemic version of what you said was like the idea beforehand, like, holy crap, this thing changes things. So I thought that was a really cool take on it.
Yeah, and we felt like weaving in the real stories of real people with the experts was going to be important here, yeah. right? Just doing an academic film and just talking to a bunch of talking heads, we didn't think it was going to connect with anybody. So we felt like trying to kind of deftly weave that together and piece together the story and kind of how we got here, you know, we thought that was an important thing.
Absolutely. So,
in what ways do you think the pandemic played in, like, opening people's eyes and all of this? You said there's, like, kind of a shift you saw there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the coverage of, you know, sort of the quote unquote essential workers, you know, you had this whole sort of thing where, you know, a lot of white collar workers kind of go home and work from home and work safely and not have to worry about the pandemic as much, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have all these, like, service workers and people who we're calling essential, but yet they're not being paid an essential wage, right? So it kind of, I think it kind of like the media started covering it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it kind of felt like it wasn't being covered.
Yeah.
You know, there was like an invisible population of workers toiling for, you know, basically a pittance. And now, you know, this COVID just kind of blew up that whole thing for everybody, I think.
I'm pretty sure every single teacher listening to this podcast understands exactly what you're saying. I mean, yeah. at that time, we were labeled as heroes, right? Forced yeah. back into the classroom.
Yeah. And that didn't last that long, though.
We're not heroes anymore. We're indoctrinators now.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I remember, like, as I started during the pandemic, so I had when I first started teaching, I had no other version of teaching other than pandemic teaching, and people were bringing little mini cakes and cactuses and succulents and like extra markers, like, here you go, just anything, whatever you need. And then pretty much like last year and this year, yeah. it's just like, no, straight to every second of free time you are going to spend it grading, going to meetings, going to trainings. And I'm like, whoa, remember when we were heroes?
We're back at it, man.
No.
Back in the grind.
This is what you do to heroes. You beat them down until they become villains.
Yeah. It's like Batman's arc, isn't it?
Yeah.
So in the documentary, there's this little focus on the economy and inflation in regard to those residing in Florida. Specifically Orlando, Orange County area. So why did you feel compelled to tell like this Florida story?
So yeah, so one of the people in our film, Anna and her family, you know, we got plugged into her. Jillian has an activist background, Jillian Hurley, another producer on the film. And she got networked into Anna's family. So Anna's story took us there, right?
Okay.
So Anna and her story and how she was struggling and, you know, living in, you know, these really terrible conditions, which actually this place was not cheap to live either, by the way.
Are you talking about the segment of the film where there's all the evictions happening and they're boarding up the windows and everything?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. And there's that whole sort of sequence where everybody's yelling at each other and
yeah.
the cops are there and the you know, the landlord or the
right.
property manager is just telling them to board it up. And
yeah,
the story took us there. That's what, you know, Florida, obviously, we know has a huge problem with housing right now and affordability. And,
yeah.
and so that just we just followed it. Right.
Well, yeah. as a new homeowner, I know this all too well.
I'm sure you do.
Cost of insurance. I mean, just yes. the interest rates are up. Everything's up, except yeah. for my wages.
I don't know. Seriously.
And then, Philip, I mean, you know all about rising rents as well.
I know. I moved 3 times in 3 years. Like, every time, it just goes up past, like, a threshold I'm comfortable paying. I live 30 minutes away now in a different county, and
wow.
I still drive to the school that I work at. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, me and my girlfriend, we're looking to like just leave the state entirely. Neither one of us are from here. So just the things are going so badly, you know, not just wages wise, but also, you know, rent and homeowner prices and the union busting. It's just so inhospitable. We're just like, well, we just don't want to be here anymore. And there's lots of people like that who can just go do anything anywhere else. I just read, I forget where it came from, but 500,000 people left Florida this past year.
I was going to say that. I heard this too.
Yeah. Florida still has like a net positive for people who like move here versus people who left. But that was like a huge number of people who all left, mostly to Atlanta area, to like Georgia
yep.
mostly, and then some to like Tennessee,
yep.
Some kind of like California and New York as well. But like we're kind of seeing this weird like flipping of population. So you get all the people leaving New York who are tired of lockdown coming down to Florida, where lockdown never really happened. So they're all moving in, the people in Florida who wish we had a little bit of lockdown are going to the other states. We're all like trading places. And I'm like, can you like, is your apartment cheap? Can I just have yours?
Well, and you get a lot of retirees moving here, right? I mean, that's always the case, yeah. Right? And maybe they can afford these prices. I'm sure they can afford these. Some of them can afford these prices, right?
I don't know, man. I don't know who can afford this stuff.
This is one of the questions that we'll get to. But, like, this idea of building a populace that can't afford anything and owns nothing, like what are you going to stand on? This is a total like house of cards that is going to collapse. So, I mean, if you have people, I'm 36, I'll be 37 in the spring. Like, what are they expecting to take away from me? I have nothing left to give.
I guess let's take your apartment, I guess, and then you can just leave.
I don't know. Because I wouldn't say people don't want to work anymore because your teachers are homeless and they're like out on the streets.
Yeah.
Like I was working, I was happy to work. I'm not going to pay like $2,200 for like, you know, 500 square foot apartment made of an old house with outside laundry and no parking.
Yeah, I suppose if you want New York prices, you move back to New York.
Totally. I mean, I was up there over the summer and I was talking to these other teachers from New York City and they heard what I was paying for a Florida apartment in an old converted house that like full of termites. And they're like, are you kidding me? You can get an apartment in Brooklyn for that. I was like, what? They're like, they pulled it up on Zillow right in front of me. They were like, here you go. This is the same price. So you like, that's the thing that, you know, a lot of these politicians and stuff, they'll say, well, you know, Florida with a sunshine state, we got all this stuff, blah, 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 whatever. That's true. You're not New York City though. Like, I mean, if you just pick any random person on the planet and ask them what America looks like, they're not going to draw Orlando, Florida. They're going to draw like the New York City skyline. Like Orlando, it's like Orlando and Florida is not like the world class place that people think it is. It's fine, but it's not New York City prices. It's crazy to me.
They're gonna draw I-4. That's America.
17 all the accidents out there, maybe. Yeah.
It's just a traffic jam. 100 McDonald's.
Yeah, I know.
God. So to us, there's like this feeling of optimism at the end of the documentary that's very, to me, and I think Philip said it too, it's this idea reminiscent of the days of Occupy Wall Street in the early 2010s. And even the sentiment that our parents and grandparents who made it through the 60s, this idea of things are going to get better. And Philip and I were talking about this in the hallway today at school, like this idea of like, oh, it's going to get better. We're optimistic. But then it kind of failed. Like nothing really changed. So my question for you is, how do we keep a real, tangible fight without it fizzling out like movements such as Occupy?
Yeah, I mean, the Occupy thing was complicated, right? So Obama was elected, we had the crash, and then you had Occupy, right? They came in, and Obama, for a lot of people on the left, was probably a disappointment, right? For a lot of reasons, he didn't go far enough, he didn't maybe help homeowners, he kind of bailed out Wall Street, and so... I think the arc of history is just battles are always happening, right? So they seem like they are getting better, but then they're not, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, it's just, this fight just never ends, I feel like. So I feel like it's like you have to get people to get engaged and stay engaged. Remember Obama, he got a lot of people engaged in his campaign, right? But then once he got in the White House, it kind of, people are like, well, we can stop being engaged after we'll Occupy, right? So not everybody stayed engaged the whole time. Yeah. And so you have to keep people engaged and voting and supporting the right candidates, but voting, doing it all the time. Because the other side never stops, right? So you always have to keep battling, I think, is the deal.
It's incredible, this idea of staying organized. So when Occupy happened, I was 19. I actually drove up to DC to be part of the Freedom Plaza movement, a little background on me. And I was there for a few days, and it was just people yelling into a mic saying, where are we going to sleep? That's literally all Occupy was in DC, by the way. It's like, where are we going to sleep? And people are like, we're going to sleep in the abandoned homes of people who got foreclosed on. And then someone take the mic and be like, you cannot do that. That is against the law. You cannot break into homes. And it's like, and that was going back and forth. And we all got upset. We all crowded the streets. We all protested. We all yelled. We all got angry. And then, what, a few months go by and we forgot about it?
Yeah, I mean, this feels a little different, though, this time, don't you think? I mean, with all the union activity, and I'm not, you know, I'm not, it's not a change is going to happen overnight, but there has been, I don't know about you guys, but there has been a rise in wages at the you know, at the bottom end of the scale in the last several years. And I think a lot of that's due to the union activity and the pressure that, or even just the threat of unions, is causing even places like Amazon to say, okay, right, we don't want you to unionize. We're going to throw you a couple dollars an hour. And, you know, so that constant pressure, I think, just mm-hmm. keeping the pressure on, I think, helps, honestly. You know, but it's, it, you know, politically at the national level, I mean, it, look at, it doesn't seem like they're going to get anything done, right? I mean, that's the way it goes. So we always like to tell people, we didn't set out to make a union film. It right. just kind of took us that way. Ah. And so we tell people that, you know, organizing doesn't have to necessarily be unions all the time, but mm-hmm. constantly organizing and constantly pushing back on the forces, it's not easy, because the people who have the money and the power, they're already way ahead of you. But you have to stay at it. We have numbers. Right. I mean, if you stay with it on the numbers game, and you look at what just happened with UAW and Ford. I mean, yeah. Ford just, you know, they just got a record contract with them. And then, you know, it's now look like GM and Stellantis are coming to the table now. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's constant pressure. I think it just you just have to keep it on, I think, yeah. over forever. You can't stop. Right. I mean, that's the deal.
I think that's kind of like the hopeful message at the end of the film, because the movie more or less kind of like culminates in the JFK Amazon shop winning their union. And it's Chris Smalls and all his people saying, we literally started with two chairs, a table and a tent, and now we've kind of got it. And I think that emotion kind of carries us through to like the credits and to like now, because like obviously this was filmed a little while ago, and we're thinking about this now in current terms, especially with public employees from our side as teachers. And I think that like kind of what you were saying, that like Obama energy, that Bernie energy, this like Chris Smalls energy, and even though it's like it's a significant win, but it's a small win, we're still seeing things that are like followers of like people like Pickett, like Brennan, who have participated in something but have to like move on to the next thing. And I think, you know, you made the connection with Orlando and Florida. Now they've got, I think it's the youngest representative in Congress, Maxwell Frost, who is all about this stuff. So, you know, he's the same age as Mr. Aziz, one of our colleagues who's been on the podcast many times. He's like a young Gen Z teacher who's all super into this stuff now. So I think kind of building that groundswell of people who know what they're talking about and have the energy to be interested in these things has been a good effect as a result of some of these failures. Kind of like what Kelsey was saying the other day of like, how do you phrase that? There's an expression. Failing successfully or something?
Oh, how to fail productively.
How to fail productively. We were talking about this in like one of our meetings, of course. So yes. The question was, how do we fail productively? And maybe Occupy was a productive failure. But
I mean, laid the seeds maybe down the things.
It did.
Right? I mean, that's how you have to look at it. Right.
You think about Occupy for a second, and how we're going after the 99%. You know, mm-hmm. we are the 99%, and you know, the 1% is like coming down on us. And then that kind of, I think, planted the seeds to where Bernie came into place in 2016. Yeah. He kind of ran a whole campaign on it, and now we're here. Unions are relevant again.
Yeah. You know what we're missing that Occupy had a lot of, though? Hula hoops and bongos. We need more of those.
No joke. The drum circle in DC was extravagant.
PCTA drum circle? What are you doing after this?
I have it filmed somewhere. I brought a camcorder. It looked like 200 people hitting drums at the same time in Freedom Plaza.
Maybe if the school board heard a drum circle outside that rivaled like the army at the gates of Mordor, maybe that's what we need. They'll listen to teachers.
You know, another point I want to make on this is also the young people, right? I mean, I'm not young anymore, but we have to get them engaged, right? And constantly stay engaged. It's their futures, right? So they have numbers. Old people mm-hmm. vote, right? Young people maybe vote when they feel like it, or I'm not to bash on young people, but we need more numbers.
You totally can bash on
people. Okay, we need more numbers, right? Not just on social media. You can't just battle on social media with people and say, oh, I did my thing, right? That's not how it works.
I think I was joking with Chris about this. He's like, oh, I know so many young people who are really like alt-right. Like,
they like younger than Chris? He's 14.
I know. And I made a joke to him because I was driving back home. I was like, well, good news is you guys don't vote. So you're right. So they can hate everything all they want. I don't know.
Well, you know, you're making... I mean, realistically, we're not just competing against like a different type of ideology. We're kind of competing against people's attention spans because, I mean, we see it every day in our classrooms. Like, Chris is not actually 14. He's just like, he's just a really young teacher. But I mean, our students, right? They're like 15, 16, 17. I mean, we have to like constantly be like, hey, up here. And they're just like watching movies and stuff on their phones. They're playing games. It's just mindless TikTok scrolling. I made a joke. Pickett was giving an exam and I said, you should just like make the very last question for 100 points, write 500 words about the most important thing you watched on TikTok. And I bet you they couldn't do it because it's just mindless scrolling. There's just nothing there. So we're competing against that plus actual things like the Koch brothers and like all this other like existential threats. Plus people just don't care and don't vote. So right. It's kind of a weird, you know, talk about a battle. I mean, it's, I don't even, that's more than a battle.
They also expect immediate change now. All of it. Yeah. So if you don't get everything you want, then, oh, I'm out.
The instant gratification.
Right? And that's not, that's not realistic, right? Mm-hmm. So like we were saying just a little bit ago, it's a long arc. It just goes on. You can't really stop, you know, and you can't, it can't be an all or nothing thing. Well, I don't get everything I want, I'm out. That's not how it works in politics. It just doesn't work that way.
So you got to grab this momentum and just like run with it as long as you can.
Right.
That's what it sounds like. And you have to find people who are willing to buy into it and go with it. Keep going. And when you fail, try again, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what happened with Amazon. That's why I find it so inspirational. You know, most union stories are like that too. They don't win the first time.
Right.
Sometimes like the second time, the third time.
Right. And you know, when Chris was, you know, his initial thing with Amazon is it wasn't over money. It was over safety.
Yeah.
They didn't walk out over money. It was over the COVID safety protocols. It wasn't even about that.
I forgot about that until I saw it in the movie because, like, there's been so much more conversation around it. When he first talks about it, how, like, people are dying and they're making us go back in, I was like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot that that's how that started.
Yeah. Remember how he had to do that?
I mean, you did. I didn't. I just walked into somebody else's empty job.
Yeah. He replaced a teacher who's like, I can't do this. I'm going to die.
Yeah. Oh. And then I walked right in and said, I will die for you.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Those are weird times. I mean, we had to go back into the workplace. We're forced in by our governor and we didn't know it was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Weird stuff.
So where are we now as a movement?
I think we're on the upswing, honestly. I think things, I mean, it's hard to sometimes, especially in Florida, it's hard to take a positive view of some of this stuff because we're in a different place. But nationally, I mean, politically, it's a nightmare, right? But I think that people are waking up. Look at all this activity you're seeing. Starbucks, Trader Joe's, the nurses. I mean, the list goes on and on. The universities are unionizing. Yeah. The students, things like that. So I think the arc is, I mean, it may look with all the sort of noise out there and seems like there's always bad news. I think it's on the upswing, honestly. I do.
And it's so refreshing to have an optimist on this podcast. Yeah,
and I'm not usually that, actually. So I'm not.
But I agree with you, actually. I'm usually the optimist at the table. I agree with you. You see it and you hear about it every single day. And the fact that NPR and all these news organizations are reporting on it every single day with updates on what's going on and talking about how people are bringing back strikes and talking about strikes. I think I heard on NPR today, it was during the Reagan administration, obviously, with PATCO. When he came in and stepped in, there was hundreds of strikes a year, and it went down to just a few dozen a year. Mm. But now, you know, it's building and building. And they were saying people don't know about strikes because it's not around them.
Right. Right.
How many people have seen a picket line before?
Right.
You know, and once they see these things, it inspires them to then go on and do the thing. So I think you're right. The more we hear about it, the more we see it. I mean, that bell is going to be in a form. We're going to get back to where we were, hopefully, in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, overall, the public, I think it topped out at 72%. Like, approval rating of unions generally has been up over 70%. I think it's at 68. It hovers in the 68 to 72.
Yeah, I think the movie, it says 68. Yeah. So but I do think it is higher at the moment.
Yeah.
So. It always baffled me that people are anti-union who, you know.
What do you mean baffled? We have people at our school who are anti-union.
And they tell you they're anti-paying. They're anti-paying. I mean, that's really what it is. If you took me their contract, they might complain. You know what I mean?
I mean, I've said this on the podcast before. My family, you know, we all lived in New York, right? Some of us did have a bad taste for unions because of like Teamsters corruption, which is famous. There's movies about it, you know.
Yeah.
So like, my grandfather had his pension wiped by like the Jimmy Hoffa administration. So like, they were against it.
Yes.
But for like mafia meddling, not for collective bargaining.
And there are there are bad unions out there too, right? I mean, it's not to say they're perfect and they're the end all be all, but you know, it's part of the solution perhaps, and you know, just general organizing, I think pushing back. You have power in numbers, really do. I mean,
I always compare it to just checks and balances. I mean, the people can't just run rampant on one side. You got to have another side to say, no, stop, wait. Mm-hmm. If you don't balance that, it's going to be unfair in one end or the other.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the last 45 or 50 years. I mean, we say it in the film. We have Nick Hanauer. He's like our billionaire in the film.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, $50 trillion has been basically funneled to the 1% in the last 45 to 50 years that if it kept productivity, kept wages, kept up with productivity, would have gone to the bottom 90%, right? Even like the top, like, I don't know, 20% would have gotten more, right? And so that, I mean, that it's important that to note that the pendulum has kind of swung way too far. And that's why we're seeing this. And we're seeing a lot of, I think it's contributing to a lot of the general instability of the country in general. Like, it's destabilizing the nation, right? It's a threat to our democracy and a threat. It's a threat to our stability overall.
We were talking in the parking lot, me and Kelsey, and we were saying how a lot of people who kind of come from that I want to say like badly informed, like conservative agenda, a lot of times you have to like draw the line for them between A and B, like just like the inference and the subtext just doesn't click for some reason. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's the instant gratification thing. But I was like, a lot of boomers that I have to explain things to when they're like, we want to make America great again. I say, so you say that, and you remember when, like, you know, families had one income, we had two cars in the garage, and, you know, you can buy a house with like one salary and go to college. Do you know what the highest tax bracket was when America was great? It was like 93%. So for every dollar that like Carnegie and Rockefeller made past a certain amount, they gave 93 cents of that to making America great. So like, we can do that. We should do that.
Let's bring it back. Let's make America great
bring
again.
Bring it back. let's
make America great again.
Make America pay again.
Make America pay again.
All right,
we're taking that one. You can't take that.
Yeah.
Anyone else out there listening, that's ours. So my last question is, what role can and should educators or even public workers play in all of this?
I mean, you guys, you get to educate our children, right? So you get to educate them on, you know, on this problem. I think you have that ability to do that, at least right now here in Florida. I don't know. At some point, they might not let you talk about that either. I don't know.
They're going to shut us down any minute.
So, I mean, I think you have to be, you know, pretty vocal about, you know, teaching reality to students, right? This is the reality, right? And, you know, public workers, I mean, same thing. Support each other, right? Support unions. Join, pay your dues. Unions work, right? So they work for you, and that's what we've seen. I mean, they're doing a great job, and I think you have to support the solidarity, really. I mean, it sounds sort of cliche, but I think it's true, honestly.
You know, we actually had a conversation in my class yesterday, I think, about rent. Because I was telling him, like, it was a conversation. It was a class meeting on, like, how we need to start taking school a little bit more serious. And I was like, but seriously, guys, do you know how much houses are right now? How much rent is right now?
Yeah.
How much salaries are right now? And they're nodding at me. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't look good out there, guys.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a major problem. And I mean, when I moved here, even just since I've been here, I mean, the prices have gone. I mean, you grew up here, right? Mm-hmm. So you know what it was like, you know, a long time ago.
My mother bought her home. It's a 4-2. For $40,000 in 1990.
Oh my God, I'm going to throw up.
Her house now, she can probably sell it right now for over $400,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, after the crash here, they were probably giving homes away, weren't they? Pretty much.
They were giving homes away, basically.
I mean, it was, you know, obviously you don't want that again, but,
no.
But you know, there's a happy
note. I do. Shut up. I own nothing. Give me two homes.
So, yeah, I mean, the housing problem is a big deal, honestly. Yeah. I mean, the stuff in St. Pete, I mean, I'm down there. I see it. The building that's going on. I don't know who's buying these places.
I don't know.
Luxury apartments.
They all say luxury apartments. I don't know anybody who lives in a luxury apartment.
Yeah.
I am poor, though, so maybe I wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're full-time residents. That's another issue. That's a whole other topic, right? Yeah. You have these big buildings and there's nobody in them.
Right? And not only that, but they don't care about their school district because they are either boomers and they don't, their kids have long since been out of school and they don't live there full time.
That's right.
So,
and you're not, they're not frequenting local establishments, right, restaurants, things like that. So, yeah.
There's this weird, you're talking about the kids in the classroom, like understanding rent and like salaries and stuff like
that.
We've also kind of hit this like low point in the curve where there's this air of just apathy and helplessness where you're like, guys, homes are crazy and like wages are so low. And they're like, we know, that's why we're not trying. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. That's why now I remember why you come here every day and do nothing.
Yeah, that's not
what's
good,
the point. Though. It's really bad. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and again, you're like fighting the, you know, you're fighting the lack of attention span, the complete apathy. Like they know what's going on too. So I understand. And like, why would they listen to us anyway? They're like, you're a public school teacher. Why would I listen to you? You're poor.
Yeah, because my life sucks. Listen to me.
Yeah. Like, we're famously poor. Listen to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the danger in Florida is that it's just going to end up being, I mean, it's already kind of going that way, but the rich and the not rich, right?
Yeah.
And then you have these sort of, you know, polar opposites, and that creates, you know, hollowing out the middle class. And, I mean, who can afford some of these home prices? And then the insurance problem that our governor doesn't want to talk about because he's not even here most of the time anymore. Yeah. You know, what other job do you get to do where you actually get to you get to go interview and audition for another job for a couple of years?
Well, when you pass laws to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's do some shout outs. So tell us all about your movie. Where's it going?
So, Americond, it's on it's streaming right now. So if you want to download it, there's about 5 streaming platforms, including iTunes. Believe it or not, we're on Prime.
Cool.
They let us on Amazon Prime. And so
I just realized the irony of that. Yeah,
you go to Americond.com. You can basically find out how to download. You can watch a trailer there, get more information on the film, and then download the film. Watch it. It's like $5, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how would you spell Americond?
So it's AmericondNed.
Okay. N-N-E-D, guys.
Yeah, .com. Yep.
.com.
Good. Yeah.
And then you were telling us about you're nominated for something?
So we have submitted to be considered for Best Documentary at the Academy Awards. I think we're one of like 83 films or something like that have been submitted. And, you know, we think it's a good time for it with, you know, with all the union activity and SAG is out, still on strike.
Yeah.
And I think the shortlist gets announced in December on that. So we're hopeful.
That's exciting.
We're crossing our fingers for you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. So we're going to take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to do our BAST Awards. So stick around.
Hello there. If you support the podcast, you can now donate directly to us from the link in the description. You can donate 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99 monthly. Your donation can help get me, Aziz, off the streets.
Well, unfortunately, Aziz will always be on the streets. He yearns for the streets. But your support will go towards producing high-quality episodes just like the one you're listening to right now.
Your support helps us keep gas in the tank, food on our tables, and our classrooms full of pencils and paper. We all know edumacators all over America are undervalued and underpaid. Help us. MOOCs like me continue to bring recognition and a voice to education professionals.
And we're back, and we're going to do our BAST Award. It's been a while since we've done this, too. It is something that is either agreeable or respectable, or as I like to say it, sorry, Ramsey, something that's going well in your life. So, who wants to start us off?
Hey, would you like to start, Jeff?
I'll start, okay. So I would like to talk about my wife and I like to volunteer. We don't have children, so we love dogs, and so we like to volunteer at our local dog rescue. So dog rescue called New Horizon Dog Rescue in South St. Pete, and we go over there. We try to spend at least once a week. We go down there, walk the dogs, spend time with the dogs. They have puppies down there. I mean, what's a better antidote than hanging out with puppies, right? I mean, that's that we, you know, we feel like it's a win-win-win all around. So that's something that gives us joy in our lives.
Where's this dog rescue at?
So it's in, I don't have the exact address, but South St. Pete. It's called New Horizon Dog Rescue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to New Horizon Dog Rescue. Yeah.
Dang it.
So as of yesterday, today is the 27th, my application, so I didn't really tell anyone about this. I filed an application with NEA, that's the national affiliate for our union, to be flown out to Phoenix to learn how to run for office, and it was accepted. So they are flying me out. They're going to put me up for 3 nights, and I get to sit in these meetings and learn how to run for office and maybe meet some people. And it's been my dream since I was like 18 to go this direction.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, I'm really excited for this.
So it sounds like you, after Occupy, you didn't get discouraged. You're still at it then.
I was upset, but yes, I will never get discouraged for what I feel is right.
Are you going to bring your drums and hula hoop to NEA?
I always have a tambourine in my car.
That is true. That's not a joke.
I'm always ready for a drum circle.
Excellent. That is super cool. I am very proud of you, because I know you've been talking about this since we met in college, and that is like a super cool thing that's finally coming to something.
Yeah. Thank you.
My base award is just kind of goes to the healthcare workers in general. They were just in the news recently for the Kaiser Permanente group going on the S word. They were on strike.
Oh no, I did it.
Canceled. But the Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers went on strike. And I think I just read that there's like 20 concurrent strikes just kind of all over the country with the healthcare workers. My best friend Joe, he's a nurse, and he was an ER nurse for a long time. He's doing something a little bit different now, called PICC lines, which is like intravenous like stuff. I don't know anything about healthcare. But there's just the stuff that he tells me, it's so parallel to what teachers go through, like just these insane trainings, just people coming out of like schools, like not fully knowing what they're doing. They're just thrown to the wolves. And he's my age too. So he's just the crazy stories that he says of like the stuff he's seen and just the way that they treat people and the ridiculous hours and expectations. And with all that, he still will say to me, he's like, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you're a teacher. And I'm like, what? You don't have to go into the ER room the day before and set up your gloves and your mask and all this? And you don't have to pay for all that? Yeah. No, I do. I have to set up everything and pay for it with my own money.
So he feels sorry for you.
Yeah, totally.
What do you mean you don't go into work an hour early every day so you can make sure you can operate on people?
Yeah, what do you mean that your patients don't call you at home on your day off?
Oh, that's funny.
So yeah, shout out to the healthcare workers, especially the ones who are standing up for their rights and their dignity.
And that's the show, guys. Thanks again for listening to Peace Days Fire Podcast. I'm Brennan Pickett.
I'm Philip Del Castro.
I'm Jeff Mann.
Peace out, guys.
Adios.
We would like to remind our listeners that the Pinellas County School Board has scheduled upcoming meetings for the following dates, October 10th and November 14th at 10 a.m., as well as October 24th at 5 p.m. It is of utmost importance for teachers, parents, and community members to attend these meetings and actively advocate for public education. We extend a special thank you, as always, to Philip Bel Castro for providing our captivating theme music, and Artifact for contributing fantastic tracks during our intermissions and promos. If you haven't already, be sure to check out Artifact's music at artifactjoints.bandcamp.com. Furthermore, we want to express our heartfelt gratitude towards our dedicated PCTA staffers, Jamie Beck, Brian Boughton, Carla Correa, and Susan Spaulding. Our executive director, Lindsay Blankenbaker, PCTA president, Lee Bryant, our union dad, PESPA president, Nelly Henez, and all of our supporters within the podcast community. Your unwavering support and dedication has been instrumental in keeping us motivated for the challenges ahead. That's it for today. I'm Brennan Pickett. Peace out, everyone.